Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Halima Croft with us. She's Barclays senior geopolitical strategist. And Richard Falkenrath is with us, Bloomberg contributing editor. He is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Halima, this is your wheelhouse. Why does the rest of the Middle East not trust Iran? This is ancient. It's about Persia. We have our stereotypes of the Shah in the modern day. Why do they not trust Persia?
Well, I mean, they see, the Saudi Arabia looks at Iran and sees it's a big regional rival. I mean, it's really a battle for power. It's a battle for ideology in the Middle East. And what's so concerned Saudi Arabia when they look at this deal is they look at what Iran is being allowed to retain. They look at the 19,000 centrifuges. They look at the stockpile, the low-grade enriched uranium. They look at the Iraq heavy water reactor. And they say you're essentially leaving the architecture in place. And they're concerned that the U.S. may withdraw from the Middle East and leave Iran with so much capabilities, and they're terrified of that prospect.
And Richard Falkenrath, I thought Jerry Seib nailed it in the Wall Street Journal this morning, a war-weary nation. Was this an agreement by a war-weary America?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw it very clearly with Syria. President Obama is not interested in new military conflict, has said he'd like to shift to Asia. It's not clear he can do that. The military option here was never a good one, and it was on the table in a kind of formal sense. But as a practical matter, this president wasn't going to launch an unprovoked attack against Iran.
You look at the map of Tehran and Iran. Who are those missiles pointed at? Who do we presume? Are they pointed at the United Arab Emirates?
Well, I mean, in terms of Iran, I mean, I think Iran talks about their military capabilities from a self-defense mode. I mean, one of the things when you talk to Iranian officials, they talk about the fact that during the Iran-Iraq war, chemical weapons were used against the Iranians. And they said, where was the international community? There were international prohibitions against these weapons. Saddam used them with the blessing, they believe, of Saudi Arabia and its allies. They say they live in a hostile neighborhood.
Okay, that said, what is the response from the rest of the Middle East at this point? If, in fact, the nuclear program is left intact.
Well, you have to watch Saudi Arabia. I mean, they've been unhappy for the past several weeks. I mean, they didn't take their seat on the UN Security Council. They've been making a lot of statements saying how happy they are with unhappy they are with the United States. The ultimate threat that Saudi Arabia has, and you don't know if it's bluster at this point, is to say, you know what, you leave them with this nuclear condo option. We will pursue our own weapons program. And that's the ultimate threat, that they'll acquire something from Pakistan.
Right. Richard Falkenrath, does this deal give a false sense of security to the U.S. and its allies?
I don't think so. I mean, it certainly some people are suggesting that, but the deal is really fairly limited in what the rest of the world gives up and, in fact, what Iran does in turn. I don't think there will be a lessening of the guard. It's not like we're going to go on a higher military alert level in the Persian Gulf and that region. And it is an opportunity for this new president, President Rouhani, in Iran to demonstrate whether he is different from his predecessor.
Richard Haass, Ambassador Haass of CFR, the accord better understood as a ceiling than a freeze. I think that really gets to it, writing in the FT today. This is a ceiling on what?
On the level of enrichment that Iran is carrying out for its nuclear program. And so uranium in its natural form is only 0.7% U-235, which is the part you need to make weapons.
Excuse me, it's Physics Monday here at Surveillance. Continue, physicists.
Uranium, natural uranium is only 0.7% U-235. In order to make a weapon out of it, you have to enrich it. Those centrifuges that they've been operating are what enrich the uranium to a higher level. You need to get about 90% enriched uranium to make a bomb. 3% is sufficient to fuel a reactor. And so what you've got here in the agreement is a cap, a ceiling in Richard Haass's terms, on the level of enrichment that Iran is going to.
But they're also increasing dash time, right? The amount of time it takes for Iran to order a nuclear weapon and to make one.
By a couple months. Not a whole lot. A couple months is not nothing, but it's not hugely significant.
Richard, you mentioned President Rouhani of Iran. He's newly elected. A lot of people say he's not the real leader. The real leader, the real power is the one, is the Ayatollah Khomeini. Halima Croft, does this deal have his blessings? Does he emerge as a spoiler here?
Well, right now, it looks like he's blessed this process. I mean, there's no way the Iranian president, the foreign minister, will be able to go out there and get this deal without the blessing of the supreme leader. But there are potential spoilers in Iran. You look at the Basiji militia, they're hardliners in the government. And that's why the Iranians keep saying, we got recognition of the right to enrich uranium. They keep saying that essentially the West came over to their side significantly. So they're going to sell the deal as essentially a little bit of a cave on the part of the West to sell it at home.
Kalima Crawford from Barclays.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.